I'll start by saying that there were two people in the room. The first was a woman in her mid to late 30s, whip smart, has a PhD in a hard science, and she is nearly a decade out from life-threatening alcohol addiction. She is crystal clear. She is not going to drink again. Nearly died. Legal trouble she's still sorting out. So forth. Crystal clear. We're meeting, as we have been for weeks and months since her discharge from the hospital, because she is stuck. I'm the second person in the room, and I am the assistant director of the eating disorders program here. She's stuck. Since her discharge from the hospital, initially she did fairly well, but has lost about 20 pounds and has been vomiting about 20 times a week. And she's stuck in this rut. This potentially lethal rut. So, we sit down, and the first thing she says is, there's no change. It's the same. And she gives this tight little smile, which has several meanings. The first of which is that it does not invite any further conversation. It says, okay, I'm done. I've said my piece. Can I go now? And the second thing it says is, I dare you to try to fix this. And the third thing it says is, I'm frightened. But she doesn't say that directly because she doesn't do vulnerable very well. And when this is going on, all these storytellers rise up in me. And the first one is the worrier. And the worrier says, you're failing, man. She's not getting any better. She's lost weight. She's vomiting all the time. That puts her in the highest risk category. Her heart is going to stop. You've seen that happen. She's going to die. She needs to be in the hospital. Anorexia, particularly purging anorexia, is the most lethal psychiatric condition there is. She's in trouble, and you're not fixing her. Get her in the hospital. That's a strong voice. Then there's the storyteller, the judge, and he's stern, and he says, behavior has to have consequences. That's the way you shape behavior. If you don't bring her into the hospital and make her understand that these decisions that she's making are leading her down the wrong path, then she's going to continue to do it. And you don't want that, and she doesn't want that, and you've got to intervene, and there have to be consequences for these behaviors. Okay, the warrior, the judge. Then there's Yoda. So, for those of you who don't know, Yoda is a little green guy who shows up in the Star Wars movies. He's a Jedi master, total spiritual badass. And the first thing that Yoda does is he listens to everybody. And when you're doing therapy, this is critical. You have to listen to all the responses that you're having to what the patient's saying, to how they're looking, to what they're doing. He says, okay, worrier, I got you. Judge, I got you. He says, you've tested her labs. They're okay. Her weight loss has actually slowed and stabilized. It's not an emergency. And then he does that Yoda thing. He says, do the work she must. Now, so let me put that in context. So normally in psychotherapy, I actually am a pretty active, engaged person. I've got the pom-poms, metaphorically speaking. I'm a cheerleader. I try to coach my patients through it. I persuade them. I confront them if need be. I tell them what I think is going on. It's not the sort of stereotypical quiet guy on the couch behind you. But I choose to listen to Yoda. So I lay back. I shut up. I sit there. I just look at her. She says, after a little while, "Well, I did talk to my husband." I said, "What'd you say?" "Well, I did tell him that I've been struggling still a bit with my behaviors." I said, "That's great. And let me fill you in." So I've been bugging her about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. Eating disorders are like mushrooms. They thrive in the dark. People keep their behaviors secret in large part because then there's less accountability and they don't have to stop. But they also keep their behaviors secret because nobody understands eating disorders except patients with eating disorders. They are wildly misunderstood. I mean, I've had, for example, I've had people say to me, "I wish I just had a little bit of anorexia nervosa." I was like, "You can't have a little bit of a mental illness. This illness is in your mind. It's working. It's got a life of its own, and you're not in control, and that's terrifying, even though it's also extremely rewarding." So, nobody understands. People say, "Well, why can't you just eat right?" Or they think it's about control, or they wonder what happened to you as a child. And it doesn't have to be about anything, and it doesn't have to have happened in the setting of childhood abuse of any kind. They just are. We don't understand all of the causes of eating disorders. But this confers a great deal of burden on people who then are being told by their therapist to make disclosures, because it's just a lot of work. But I'd be quiet. I just lay back. She says, "I go to meetings with this wonderful person, a friend of mine who's a teacher," she said, "and I talk to her too." I said, "That's great." More quiet. She said, "Also, I talked to my sponsor, even though she wasn't always the most helpful person, but I talked to her too, and she actually said some really good things and helped me kind of put a plan in place." She said, "And actually, this week when I was waking up in the middle of the night, actually didn't vomit every time. And I think I have a plan so that I can avoid it in the mornings for next week." I said, "That's great." And she smiled.